different than what other people have been talking about, but there are some surprising ways that I think there overlaps, because I'm a historian of colonial carceral spaces, specifically those of French Indochina. During the French period in French Indochina, and just to show you the countries that made up Indochina, there was actually only one colony, which was Cochinchina, southern Vietnam. The other four were all protectorates of the French. Between the years of 1865 and 1941, the French deported from French Indochina 10,000 prisoners to various sites around the world. One thing to mention about this is that because these were all in different legal categories from each other, because there were five different parts of Indochina, it became very difficult legally in the end about what could happen to people from specific locations of Indochina. Historically, people were exiled in Vietnam, and they were exiled. I'm really going to talk about Vietnam today because I don't have much time to talk about prisoners from Cambodia and Laos, although there were quite a lot of prisoners from Cambodia, there weren't that many from Laos. Historically, in Vietnam, the emperor's decree, or from the imperial court, there was exile from north to south and vice versa. This was not just to move troublemakers away from an area, it was also a psychological punishment, because within Vietnam, there's a very strong sense that you have to be in your natal village in order to tend the graves of your ancestors. There's a very profound psychological rupture that takes place if you're taken from that area. On colonizing Vietnam, one of the first priorities of the French administration was a prison system. And they actually set up a prison colony right off the coast of Vietnam, an island right here, it's quite hard to see in this map, called Polo Condor, which was technically a penal colony. The intensity of the Vietnamese resistance against the French generated demands for fortified camps where anti-colonial leaders and prisoners of war could be locked away. However, the definition of a political prisoner, of course, was very blurred between those who were committing what we might think of as common crimes and anti-French crimes at the time. And so there was no real category for political prisoners as such until the 1890s, where there was a bit more leeway. So prior to the 1890s, anti-colonial rebels could not be charged with political acts. It could only be banditry or piracy. So given the fact they had a whole island dedicated to holding prisoners, it would seem that the only reason the French would export prisoners overseas was if they were thought of as a particular danger. However, they also wanted labor, and they wanted to move labor around the French Empire. This was also, in some ways, different than what they were doing with French prisoners at the time, because what they'd done with French prisoners was keep them in these naval bagne, right, the ports where they were using French prisoners they'd taken off boats, which is what prisoners had originally been doing, keeping them there in these kind of naval dockyard prisons, and eventually exporting them overseas. And the first place they exported French prisoners overseas from France, metropolitan France, was French Guiana, which became a penal colony, shortly followed by New Caledonia. Also as a penal colony, French Guiana from the beginning had many problems with illness and disease, so they didn't like to ship as many French prisoners there, and they started shipping prisoners from the other parts of the empire, including French Indochina, where a lot of prisoners went. If you look at the French Empire, you can see the vast amount of places they had to send people to. So obviously they wanted to send people to their main penal colonies, French Guiana and New Caledonia. However, there was a great spread of locations to which people could be sent. And you can see down here, these were all technically penal colonies. There was a penal colony in Gabon, the Congo, which is only for Asian prisoners, Obok, which today is Djibouti, and the two I mentioned, New Caledonia, Pacific, French Guiana, South America. And then other general sites, Reunion, Martinique, Guadeloupe, also for prisoners. However, these are what I would call specialized sites. They were for emperors, they were for members of the royal family of Cambodia and Vietnam who contested the French. They were for high-level political exiles to be sent, especially to Algeria. Legal categories, I mentioned the complexities of the legal categories, and just to give you a broad sort of sketch of what category you could be in. There were three, however, there are many blurred areas. People would often talk about exiles when they meant someone who'd been deported. An exile technically was just exiled by a letter, some kind of administrative decree. This was someone who was seen as a threat to the French, would be exiled just by a mere signature. A deportee was an illegal category that had to be done by a military or a judicial tribunal, and you could be sent to a simple, you could be a simple deportee, or you could be sent to an enclosed fortification. Perhaps the most famous enclosed fortification is Devil's Island, an island off French Guiana. Islands were often just thought of as enclosed fortifications in and of themselves. They didn't necessarily have to have a huge complex of buildings on them. The third category, common law prisoners, which was you'd murdered someone, all sorts of common law crimes. And though, as I said, there's lots of blurred areas here. If you were breaking a French monopoly, was that a political crime or was that a common law crime? The French had monopoly in opium, for example, in French Indochina. So people that contested the opium ban would be common law prisoners, despite the fact it had a political bent to it. I mentioned Algeria, and Algeria was a place that they would keep prisoners essentially under house arrest in different locations around Algeria. In Algiers, Constantine, Biskra, Batman, Jeffna. Jeffna is just sort of, if you look, I can't point, I really should have a pointer here, but Jeffna was on the edge of the Sahara Desert. It was about the worst place you could be sent to, and despite the fact that you weren't being, there was no violence as such acted upon you, you were just left there to rot. And indeed, one of the Cambodian princes died there at the age of 33 from alcoholism. And out of all the exiles that I've looked at in Algeria, I've only found one that didn't succumb to alcoholism during his exile there. So you can see people turning to some kind of way to cope with what is happening to them. Women, were any women sent? I've only found the records of 20 Vietnamese women out of the 10,000 that I found sent overseas. So not very many. And I've only found one that you might think of as a high-profile political prisoner who's still famous in Vietnam today. This is actually a postcard. The French always like to make postcards of everything. So it's kind of funny. Here, I'm sending you a postcard of a political prisoner. Here she is with her daughter. She was sent to French Guiana with about 20 of her gang, and she died en route of TB, which was a huge problem with prisoners. She died of TB in Algiers, although don't tell the Vietnamese that, because she's still in the history books as having committed suicide off the boat en route. Now that would be a hard thing to do, because when you traveled, you were caged, okay? So it'd be very hard to kill yourself en route in that manner, although they probably kept her in a separate part of the cage downstairs. This is common. Boats were constructed specially to transport prisoners. And so French prisoners and prisoners from French Indochina and other parts of the empire would all be transported in these specially made boats. One place that a lot of Vietnamese prisoners went, later on political, all the categories went, was French Guiana. You can see a map of it here. For those of you who don't know exactly where it is, so you may have seen Papillon, which is all about, it's right here. It's right kind of there by itself. Vietnamese prisoners had a very hard time with it there generally, because the French believed that they were immune to yellow fever, But that was, of course, not the case. They didn't have any resistance to yellow fever because it's not part of Southeast Asia. Malaria, perhaps they built up some resistance to. They were put on all of these working projects to build huts in which they'd to live and then to clear the very dense jungle of French Guiana to build roads and other infrastructure. There was a terrible death rate, thank you, terrible death rate in French Guiana. You can see here, these are colonial records of the roads that they were building. A lot of them who've served out their sentences could not return to Vietnam. Early on, prisoners did manage to serve out sentences and return. Later on, this was really not the case. And by the 1890s, you could be sent overseas for life for a two-year sentence in Vietnam, because by that time, people were wanting to send prisoners overseas because Vietnamese were thought of as good agricultural laborers. So you'll see letters from the Governor General of the Congo, Madagascar, saying, how many Vietnamese prisoners have you got? Like, clear the prisons and send them here to teach the Africans how to grow rice, because they don't know what to do. New Caledonia, I won't say too much about this, except an interesting thing about the first prisoners who went to New Caledonia from Vietnam. Some of them ended up marrying there. This is at the end of their sentences. This is very unusual, because at the time in Vietnam, interracial marriages between Vietnamese and French were banned. Prisoners were basically, you know, told marry a French female prisoner and settle down here and colonize, right? It was all about the French wanting them to colonize New Caledonia. So the prisoners had to go along to the courtship kiosk and see if a French woman would take them. And if a French woman took them, they were given land by the French, and they were encouraged to then set up there. This is a very unusual thing, given the fact that at the time, interracial marriages were thought of greatly askance in Vietnam itself. But as I said, it legally couldn't happen. It could happen in France itself, but not in the colonies. Other political prisoners were sent there later. It ceased being a penal colony in 1897, but they sent Vietnamese political prisoners there right up until 1917. This was a man that was sent in 1912 for an uprising in Hanoi. This is a wonderful picture from a newspaper that was published this summer. And one thing that's great about this picture is that he's kind of looks like the French colonial gentleman there. He's sort of making clear, I'm a prisoner, but I'm certainly not a native because I'm turned out, thank you, in my nice white outfit. Escapees is a fascinating topic that I can't get into, except people could travel very far and wide. They were very good at escaping from French Guiana, the Vietnamese, at different points of history because they could pretend to be Chinese. And throughout all of these islands is a large Chinese diaspora. So I've seen records of escapees from Cuba. This is a record from the Cubans. This is a restaurant set up in British Guiana, a Vietnamese restaurant there. I can't talk about petitions right now. But in terms of tracing people's lives, one thing I've loved about this project is the kind of documents that are just thrown into the colonial archive. And in Aix-en-Provence, where the archives are, I found a whole cache of documents in which people had written letters and diaries. The French just confiscated it, never translated it, and just put it in a box because they didn't, you know, the effort to translate all of this, to find interpreters, would be too difficult. And so I found this teeny little book, which is a little diary, and inside was this picture. So probably I was the first person who'd read this diary since it was taken from a prisoner en route to French Guiana. Legacies, the Vietnamese community in French Guiana, the intermarriage. He was a political prisoner, Tran Tu Yen. This is his daughter, who's a mix of slave ancestry and Vietnamese ancestry. So fascinating. One last thing, this is my last slide. In Vietnam today, one thing I also think is fascinating is that you find some of these exiles have become spirits, worshipped in the places from which they were exiled, which I think is a fascinating topic. This is a famous Exile is exiled all over the world. This is him in a temple in North Vietnam. And this actually, I know this is a bad picture, but this is a shrine set up to the female political prisoner I told you about who died. So it's an interesting way in which people return to their native soil even if they died very far away. Thank you very much.